This is the Afternoon Drive Podcast with Philip and Skip from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
4:07, it's News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ. Philip Teresi, Skip Echeverria. Your calls at 490-5858 or toll free at 800-776-5858. And your next shot at the 25K payoff in play right now. Text the national keyword to 95819. Don't text and drive, please. This is not a first in and win kind of deal. Just when you get parked, text the national keyword to 95819. This hour and every hour, weekdays from 8 to 5, you could win $100. And if you do, that puts you in the running automatically for the $25,000 grand prize drawing. That's why we call it the 25K payoff. This hour, you're texting the word, oh my God, I almost dropped it, save, S-A-V-E. Text the word SAVE to 95819. You could win that $100. That puts you in the running for the $25,000. If you want to know more about how the 25K payoff works, you can read the contest rules at KMJNow.com. But it starts with you texting this hour the word SAVE, S-A-V-E, to 95819. And thank you to the National Weather Service in Hanford for another flash flood warning. That, I suspect, is going to be an issue throughout the Sierra Range, as well as throughout all the burn scar areas. We will have more details for you about those warnings as the hour continues. But for now, keep your eyes open. If you're on a burn scar, if you're in the mountains and you see rain, be prepared.
Yeah, the thunderstorms are expected through 5 p.m. tonight. So be advised and watch out for the flooding. You don't want to get stuck in that. Okay, so.
Yes.
We all agree that the lady that did the speech is clearly got some things going on. Misuse of maybe the religious spirit. But I just want to know from you, Philip, do you believe in prophetic dreaming? Do you believe that your dreams are telling you something about the future? Are you into all that stuff?
I want to be. And depending upon my BAC and which pills I found in the back of the drawer, I can be at least temporarily convinced. In the sober light of day, I tend to think that people see patterns where sometimes there isn't one.
So the course I'm teaching this year is about kind of the foundations of therapy and theory related to therapy. And yeah. Who do we know? The father of psychology is Freud, right? And Freud was very much into dream interpretation. So I've been reviewing a lot of this with students and then also talking about how dreams, I think, can tell us a little bit about what we're thinking about because it's our subconscious, right? So, you know, if you're anxious, if you're nightmares, those kind of things, it could work out. But I've always wondered if prophetic dreaming really works, then why don't people dream about like winning the lottery? Well, how come it's always in bad ways that we tend to see those prophecies, air quotes, come out?
It's an interesting thing because we don't remember pain accurately. And I have, of course, the perfect thing to cite to prove that we don't remember pain accurately. The fact that any of us have siblings.
True story. It was so much worse the second time.
Now, that said, there was a program, it's probably been 10 years now, called Through the Wormhole, Morgan Freeman.
Okay.
And it was not as scientifically rigorous as, say, Carl Sagan or even Neil deGrasse Tyson's Cosmos. It had one foot kind of over the line into not so much ancient aliens as maybe unsolved mysteries.
Okay.
And one of the things that they got into is something called random number generators. And the idea that you've got this machine that's just constantly randomly displaying a sequence of numbers. And it was determined that if you had a test subject sit and concentrate and focus on the machine, they would eventually learn to anticipate the random number to be generated. And in some cases, they had, and I don't remember exactly how they came to this conclusion, but they believed that the individual, the test subject, could even influence the number to be displayed. And so this agency, entity, whatever, that's been monkeying with random number generators has long since placed random number generation stations all over the world. And this guy takes out these two charts, and they are graphic representations of de-randomization events where there was a significant drop-off in the random ordering of these machines on a global scale. And the first one he holds up, it's kind of an unremarkable chart, and there's some spiky activity on it. And then there's this nice kind of jump and drop. And it jumps up about a quarter of the page and then drops back off. And he reports that this de-randomization occurred on the night of Barack Obama's 2008 acceptance speech after he was successfully elected president. That there was this like collective something that happened when Barack Obama went out and gave this speech. And you remember the night. I mean, even if you managed to maintain your composure, you remember that night. You remember there were people crying and hugging and the whole bit. It was kind of a big deal. First black man elected to the office mm-hmm. of president. Folks were excited. 8 years of total disappointment, subsequent total disappointment notwithstanding.
I didn't watch it.
The next one he takes out looks like a tidal wave. It is this massive spike that jumps up the height of the page. And it goes on for hours. And he explains that this is the de-randomization that occurred on the morning of September 11th. But what was significant to him, especially significant to him, was that the de-randomization started 25 minutes before the first plane hit. As if though, and I don't remember exactly how he phrased it, but as if though the collective unconscious
knew something was happening.
Paused.
Really?
I find that idea fascinating. I find it hopeful. If there is a collective unconscious, it is, if there's any way to demonstrate it, to tap into it, I think it's proof of some continuation of the self beyond the corporeal plane. And I love that idea. I wish I believed in that idea. I don't, and I think that precognitive visions are just, they're a lesser fantasy.
So, I don't know then. I don't buy into the prophetic dreaming. I think that we have like dreams and fantasies, and sometimes those come true, and that's awesome.
Sure.
But I don't really necessarily see the prophetic part. And I certainly don't think that we can enact death on others as a result of your prophetic dreaming. Now, sometimes you'll see there's a lot of talk about this, and I don't know if this is more of a new age thing or just since we're recycling all great old ideas, everybody just found a copy of The Secret, which was popular a while back. But I do get a lot of folks talking about like manifesting things and this idea that if you put it in your head and then you really, what do? Work towards it might actually happen. And that to me, I think is interesting because it's important to recognize that there has to be the work behind it. You don't just like manifest the perfect, that you don't manifest the perfect job. You don't manifest the perfect body. You don't manifest the perfect retirement or the perfect partner. You have to work towards it, but you have a good idea of what you're working towards in your head.
I see something, I want it. A level of fitness, a level of professional excellence, a woman, whatever. I see something and I want it. I desire to have that in whatever sense that means. If I start putting one foot in front of the other in the direction of accomplishing that, and it's something that I really want, isn't it natural that I would dream of the success that I might eventually have since I'm putting one foot in front of the other?
I would think so. And then if you don't achieve the thing, then there's some sort of like reconciliation of that, or this, it wasn't meant to be.
Or it was just, I had a sexy dream or whatever. It always comes back to sex, doesn't it?
For you, apparently. Boy, Freud would have a field day with you.
I don't know. I don't think Freud would have a very hard time with me. Get it?
It's a new era in News Talk. Only on News Talk 580-1059 KMJ.
If you haven't done it yet, you need to text the word SAVE, S-A-V-E, SAVE, to 95819. You could win $100 this hour. Get one step closer to $25,000. Details online at kmjnow.com. We have an update on a story that you've heard in our news coverage here, coming to us from Boise, Idaho. Two people have died following a shooting at the Boise Town Square Mall. Several other people, including an officer, were injured. And it's believed to have only been one shooter who is now in custody.
Chief of the Boise Police Department, Ryan Lee, hosted a media briefing saying, quote, I cannot stress enough how traumatic this event is for the community at large, as well as those who were witnesses and the families involved. We ask the community to keep the families of the deceased in their thoughts and to respect their privacy.
Chief Lee had said that officers were called to the mall earlier today, Monday afternoon, after reports of shots fired and at least one person was down. When officers arrived on the scene, they found a person who matched the description of the suspect, and there was an exchange of gunfire, which resulted in an officer being injured.
Idaho Governor Brad Little says, those injured in today's unthinkable shooting at the Boise Town Square Mall are in my prayers, and the state of Idaho stands prepared to assist the Boise Police Department as they investigate the shooting.
Now, at this point, a motive is not yet known, but as mentioned, the single shooter is in custody.
Mass shooting events have occurred, it seems like, everywhere at this point. We've had them in schools, every imaginable workplace, churches, and shopping malls. I think that speaks to the disparate motivations for the people who do this kind of thing. They've got this guy in custody. They're going to interview the hell out of him. They're going to interrogate him. I would imagine that we will probably at some point see the FBI get involved, and you'll see the suspect's name get released. A mugshot will come out. If there's any social media or internet traffic to be traced down, both law enforcement and the media will immediately get onto that and start examining all of it for clues and for red flags. We know this dance. One piece that I'm perpetually unsatisfied by is on the occasions where law enforcement is able to take a suspect into custody, we talk about wanting to know the motivations. We talk about wanting to know the psychology of a person who does something like this, to understand what has happened to cause them to
respond violently.
To act so violently to so many strangers, or sometimes acquaintances. I mean, you've got the whole spread here. When do we see that? When do we see the psychological, what's the word I'm looking for? The psychological profile. When do we see the information that we're able to say that this has happened under enough circumstances with enough suspects taken into custody and enough evidence gathered that we can point to, you know, here's a constellation of a dozen warning signs, any six of which should be cause for you to check on that person or call the police or whatever.
Well, that's such a good question, right? Because there's probably enough of that constellation you could look to now, but then how do you get that information out to people? And then how do you get the right people to pay attention? Because when we always do the hindsight thing, I mean, we talked about this with the Parkland shooter. There were all of these situations where there should have been some gatekeeping or a check, and there wasn't. Now, I think that part of understanding the motive is going to be important, because is this a random act of violence, or is this somebody who is a disgruntled employee, for instance? Because I do think that those are two different circumstances.
Sure.
And when you've got the random violence against strangers, that's a different type of psychopathology versus if you have somebody who's making threats at a workplace to coworkers and who could be violent and then shows back up. Because I do think that I've heard it enough to say that people were worried about somebody getting fired and then not the follow-up of, are we going to be safe here with this person out? Because I do think that sometimes, whether it's that just the corporate belief of, oh, well, we got them out, or, oh, we don't have to worry about them anymore because they're fired, they're not going to come back. I don't know that with some people that's enough, because we've seen that time and time again where disgruntled people come back to the workplace and exact revenge on others.
Well, I mean, who can forget the expression going postal and the genesis of a disgruntled former postal employee horribly casting that as something in the collective memory. And then you've got the Adam Lanzas. You've got the Klebold and Harris's. You've got the church shooters. You've got this situation, which we don't know at this point. It could be randomly targeted violence. It could be a former employee of some shop in the mall. There's so many different motives. There's so many different circumstances. And yet, we've got enough of a sampling at this point that I feel like there has to be something more than just, oh, wow, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Well, and I would agree with you. I would also go to the point of, do we need to start thinking about things like metal detectors when you walk into a place where a lot of people can be congregating?
Let's pick up there when we get back. If you'd like to join in on this, 490-5858 or 800-776-5858. Two dead, several injured, including a police officer at a mall in Boise, Idaho today. Another mass shooting, another police chief, mayor, and governor with their hats in their hands offering words of comfort, and still not a... not a intelligible set of responses or means to anticipate coming from the mental health community.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
This is the Afternoon Drive Podcast with Philip and Skip from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
4:37 on your Afternoon Drive. Philip and Skip at News Talk 580 and 105.9 KMJ. Just a minute more on the Boise Mall shooting. The information at this point is, it's very thin, and it's going to be. There's an ongoing investigation. What we do know is that two people have died. At least one officer was injured, and several others were injured or shot in the process of getting this lone gunman, who they have captured. The shooter is now in custody. We had a little reprieve from some of this in the course of the pandemic. Just there weren't as many people around each other. We weren't congregating quite as tightly in the so-called soft targets. Now we're getting back to normal, which means that a certain kind of person is going to reemerge. I don't think that you can draw a direct line from Adam Lanza to James Holmes to Caesar Sayoc. In all three cases, you've got very different people with, I think, fairly different issues, psychologically speaking, and in any kind of intelligent, diagnosable way. I think that what was wrong with each of them was a little different in each case. But we've now got... I remember the moment that people really opened their eyes to mass shootings being an issue of mental health, that it had gone beyond the occasional bad things happen and had moved into there's something wrong. And it really was Sandy Hook was the moment where people went, yeah. Why aren't we seeing the psychology? Why aren't we able to profile these people? Why is there not a proactive element to dealing with this?
But there are, because we do try and raise red flags. We do say, hey, this person is struggling. We do go, hey, this person might have access to be able to buy weapons. Shouldn't we pay attention? And I mean, we had that woman that called up last week when we were talking about the Parkland murderer. And we do. It's just, do people listen? You know, we talked about this. I don't even remember the name of the program here in California that's supposed to do kind of like a background check. I mean, how many stories have we had recently about people who were not supposed to have weapons because of felony charges, specifically because of domestic violence charges, who were then arrested with weapons? So I get frustrated sometimes when the conversation about mental health comes up and it's a mental health issue. And then there's really like, oh, it's a mental health issue. And then nothing. My question about, you said soft targets. Are we at the place now where the reality is maybe you need to have metal detectors at things? I mean, we have metal detectors at concerts. We have metal detectors, you know, going in, or you get, you know, like wanded when I went into the comedy show this weekend, or if you go to Fresno State, those kind of things. Like, do we need to have those at places where people congregate now? I don't like it, but I mean, if nothing else is changing.
I don't like it. And I don't think that it is. I don't think that it is the end all solution. Look, the Gilroy Garlic Festival was checking people coming through the gates.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And homeboys snuck in the back and, like, you know, walked across a 3-inch deep creek to get into the staging area to go out and do what he did. When I put warning signs of suicide into Google, the entire first page is results. There's American Psychological Association, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, National Alliance for Mental Health. I mean, you can go through boom, 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 boom. Warning signs for suicide. When I put in warning signs of domestic abuse, I get an entire page of results from entities like and affiliated with the National Institute of Mental Health, Marjorie Mason Center, so on and so forth. When I put in warning signs of a bank robbery, I get a dozen different news articles that give me warning signs to look at in body language standing in line at the bank. When I put in warning signs for a mass shooter, I get this very scattered, for the most part, it's news articles about things that happened that are dealing with individual cases. There isn't a, as in the case of suicide, there isn't a here are 10 things. If you hit 5 out of 10, we need to talk.
So I think that might just be a simple keyword search issue, because if you put in warning signs of homicidal behavior, because suicidal behavior and homicidal behavior are often kind of one in the same, you assess in the same way, or you could put warning signs of violence towards others. But I get what you're saying. I think the reason why you don't see that is because the minute we start talking about things with guns, there's like this whole side of folks that it immediately go to, it's a mental health issue, it has nothing to do with guns. Well, it's interwoven when it's somebody who's using a gun. So it is. But for instance, homicidal behavior looks like increased loss of temper, frequent physical fighting, increased use of drugs and alcohol, increased risk-taking behavior, declining performance at school or work, acute episodes of major mental illness. I would also include in there significant recent loss. So like a parent, a job, those kind of things. Planning how to commit acts of violence and announcing threats or plans for hurting others. So that's where I go back to when we talked about the violence that we've seen from disgruntled employees. If they leave and go, I'm going to come back and kill you all, and then people go, oh man, he just made me angrier, oh, we're not really going to, you know, like follow up on that. You know, should that have been, even if that person was, I don't know, just venting, should they go and be taken seriously and their house searched, and do they have access to weapons and those kind of things? Because I think if you're threatening to kill somebody, it should be taken seriously. Now that said, in a session, if somebody goes, oh, I could just kill them, that's, you have to feel it out, right? You have to do an assessment. That's different.
Well, and yeah, I mean, you know, oh my God, I could kill that guy. Well, are you listening to somebody make a death threat? Are you listening to somebody say that they're just tired of another human being's voice? I don't think that anybody's confused about that part. I think that we understand that we all say things facetiously. I don't know, man. I would like to see a more intelligent, a more mindful academic approach to some of this. And look, there's no such thing as perfect. We've got 100 pages of Google results on how to spot signs of suicidal ideation, the potential for suicide, the danger of suicide. We've got resources everywhere from Fresno State to the National Alliance for Mental Health and their national hotline. And people still kill themselves. I'm not looking for perfect. I'm disappointed leaning into angry that we're not doing better. I don't want to glorify these killers. If anything, just the opposite. I want a comprehensive explanation of what the worm in their brain was doing, so that the next person who's rooming with that guy sees it, hears it, and goes, oh my stars and garters, we need to let somebody know this idiot's making pipe bombs.
Well, and I think also keep in mind, you know, like I said, I searched warning signs of homicidal behavior. He's whoever did this is end stage. Like they went and killed the people, but that's probably, there was probably a buildup of violent behavior. But again, looking back, I think that the difficult part is when we go, yeah, there's something wrong with them, like mental health issues, but then there's not really attention paid to that. And then when we do go, hey, red flags, it's like, ah, no, it's not that big a deal. And then we're left with the, you know, we feel bad for everybody that got hurt, and sorry about the people who died. In this case, it happened to be Idaho. So that's why I'm saying, if that's going to continue, because that's what we keep doing, then do you just start wanding people and putting armed folks on patrol at the mall?
I think you arm everybody at Orange Julius.
Coming up after 5 o'clock, we'll have your top of the hour news. We'll also have your trending topics and your final chance today to get one step closer to the $25,000 payoff. Details on that on the way. If you were watching football over the weekend, though, you might have seen that one Tom Brady was doing a little bit of celebrating. He hit the big 600.
Yeah.
600 touchdowns.
Did you hear about the drama with the ball, by the way?
Yes, I did. He threw it, and the guy threw it up in the stands, and then they asked for it back. And the guy was cool. Like, I guess the guy in the stands gave it back.
I would say sold dearly. But
yeah. But anyway, 600, that's pretty exciting.
9-year-old Noah Reeb came to the game to see his hero play. And through the game, he was holding up a sign that read, "Tom Brady helped me beat brain cancer." This 9-year-old kid had been experiencing a little bit of fatigue, a little bit of behavioral issue. They took him in, did the scan, and spotted a tumor in the center of his skull.
Poor baby.
To celebrate successful therapy, this kid got to go watch Tom Brady play ball.
Yeah. He's originally from Utah, Tom Brady being one of his heroes. And I think it's extra special, too, because right now it's the critical catch campaign that the entire NFL is doing. You'll see the different color, like kind of stripes and stuff on all the gear. It's a campaign that is to raise awareness for all of the different types of like cancer awareness. So how special for him to go and for the GOAT to see his sign.
Yeah, Brady ran up, grabbed a ball cap, autographed it, gave the kid a high five and a hug, gave him this autographed ball cap. Dad says that that Noah was just rocked. He was crying. He was so excited. And the 9-year-old got a cool memento from the game. But Brady almost lost the ball. Like you said, he throws touchdown number 600. Wide receiver Mike Evans is at the other end of that catch.
That guy's going to be so, so in the doghouse.
And Evans says he just didn't realize it was that one. He just didn't realize that was 600. So he gets where he's going. He chucks the ball up into the stands to some fan. Game's over. Brady wants the ball. And Evans realizes what he has done. So the officials, the Bucks, and the stadium chased down the fan. They got him before he got out of the got out the door. They gave him a different game ball and $1,000 gift card to the Bucks team store.
They had to. I'm surprised that the guy didn't hold out for more, because that ball probably could have been worth way more. But then I don't know how you would get like the certificate of authenticity figured out or whatnot, but. Oh, boy. I still think that Evans is going to have to do a sorry, bro, like kind of gift. But a cool story, even if you don't care at all about the Bucks. It was a cool game for them.
Cool thing for Noah. Cool thing for Tom Brady. And, Mike Evans is probably going to be working that off a little bit. It's the Afternoon Drive at News Talk 580 and 105.9 KMJ. On the way, Hertz placing an order for 100,000 new vehicles after coming out of bankruptcy, all Teslas.